This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Rodessa Jones, is an actress, director, and dancer. She's the co-artistic director of the San Francisco performance company Cultural Odyssey. Her brother is the choreographer and dancer Bill T. Jones. Rodessa Jones is best known for her one-woman shows, like Hot Flashes, Power Surges, and Private Summers, and Big Butt Girls, Hard-Headed Women, which she'll bring to the National Black Theater Festival next month. Big Butt Girls is a series of monologues based on the stories of women in prison. Jones has worked with many women in prison through the Medea Project, a program of workshops for incarcerated women, which she founded and directs. She often talks about her life to the women to help get them talking about theirs. A heads up to parents, parts of our discussion may not be appropriate for young children. You said one of the parts of your life that you like to share with the women in prison that you work with is the fact that you became a mother at the age of 16.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a lot of the women in prison you've worked with became mothers at a young age, probably even younger than you. This might be much too personal, so you could just tell me to back off on this one. But I know one of the characters that you're working on now is Rubber Girl, and it's going to be a very kind of pro-condom type of character. When you were 16 and got pregnant, did you think at all about birth control?
Oh, no. We're talking 1964. I was in love. the father of my daughter was attending Cornell University. I was so impressed that he was a college boy, and he even said to me, he put Vaseline on his penis, if I may say that on the radio, and said to me that I wasn't going to get pregnant, you know, and because I was very afraid of getting pregnant, just because. It all around me, women didn't seem very happy. You know, women that were married, and that had been not a part of my plan for myself. But this boy assured me that he had been to college, and he was not going to let anything happen to me. This is almost verbatim, you know. And so at 16, no. But my body stopped. That was the only child I ever had, and I think that it really had to do with how traumatic that was for me.
You mean you couldn't have children after that?
No, never again.
Wow. Huh.
Never again. I think it had to do with I'm never going to be caught in this situation again.
Was that just as well as far as you were concerned that you never got pregnant again?
Yes, I've fallen in love later in my life, and there's been a couple of men that maybe, but my daughter's a joy and my granddaughter's a joy. And it's to have three or four kids, oh my God, you know, just feeding them and taking care of them and rearing them is a lot, you know.
When you figured out that Vaseline wasn't a particularly effective form of birth control, you must have been furious with this guy.
I was just devastated because then he did really a mean thing to me, and I think it was he implied that I was just a loose girl, you know. Obviously, I had to be loose because I'd had sex with him. And he named a couple of people that, you know, he supposedly had heard. You know, it was very painful and very sad, you know.
When people use their age and their college education to to lie to you, that's a scary thing.
And I so wanted him to be the one, you know. I don't know where it came from. Maybe it's just my mother and her caustic pride, but I never just wanted any simple old guy. To meet a colored boy in 1964 who was going to school, middle class boy. He had uncles. He had gone to West Point. I mean, he was that kind of a boy. And but in support of him, I think he was just as scared because later his father said some terrible things to him in my presence about laying down with nigger gals, and we were all black. You know, so it's back to self-loathing and, you know, and an attempt at a deeper understanding of what life brings us. Yeah.
How did your mother find out that you were pregnant?
She came in the bathroom and I was in the bathtub. And my mother had had 17 pregnancies and 12 of us lived. And so my mother just took one look at me and knew that I was pregnant. And that was scary. It was just she was so upset and so furious and disappointed, you know. And she wanted me to marry this boy right away. She wanted me to marry him. And I just said that, you know, Mom, I don't think he wants to marry me. And if he doesn't want to marry me, I don't want to marry him. And later she said to me, She said, when you told your father and I that, we talked about it to deep in the night. And I think for my mother, this woman, it made some sense, you know, on some level, that why should I be stuck with some guy who did not want to be with me? I was already stuck with a kid, and they had agreed to help me take care of the child. So did I think she understood.
Did you want to have the baby? Did you? This was 1964, did you say?
My daughter was born in 1965.
Okay, so abortion wasn't legal yet.
No. Well, you know,
you could have gotten an illegal abortion. Was that an option you thought about? You could have given the baby away. Was that an option you thought about?
I thought about giving the baby away, but you got to remember, I was a country girl. My mother and father had been migrant workers who had settled in upstate New York from Florida. I lived up on a dirt road. I was really a tomboy, you know, who had sort of fallen in love, because at that time I think all girls were in love with love, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, pregnancy had, you know, just was like, what? You know? And it was like, I'm what? And I mean, I was already like 4 or 5 months pregnant when this little girl who was much younger but more worldly told me where babies came out of, and I was terrified.
Oh, you didn't know?
No, I mean, I didn't know. I just didn't know. I mean, I would have never have had sex with this boy with Vaseline if I had had more information. And my poor mother, I think, was just terrified that if she didn't talk about it, we wouldn't get caught. So, no, abortion, a friend of mine, a man I knew, had agreed to take me to New Jersey for an abortion, but that was really totally far-fetched. And my mother told my father, and they both let me know that we were keeping that baby, you know. And my father told me that, you know, you'll understand by and by why this happened to you. And he said to me, please don't give away my blood. He said, if you need to move on, your mother and I will keep her. And if you decide to stay, I will share everything with you. If I have 2 grains of rice, you get one and that baby gets the other, but please don't talk about giving her away.
So did your parents help you raise the baby?
Yes. I was able to go back to school.
That's great.
Back to high school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. My mother was adamant that I had to go back to school.
Did they let you go? You know, sometimes they throw you out if you're pregnant.
Oh, this is, God bless them, Wayland, New York, Wayland Central School. And so I was told by the principal that I could go to school as long as I could climb the stairs, you know. And I went home after Thanksgiving vacation, and I did not come back until after the 1st of February. My daughter was born January 10th. So it was a very central school in a very small hamlet in upstate New York. And so I think I just kind of blew their minds. You know, 'cause my mother said I was going to school. So I went to school. I was showing and I went to school. You know, there's no way around that. Yeah.
I know you've been thinking a lot about what it means to get older, not elderly, but older, because after you passed 50, you started doing this show about turning 50 and about going through menopause.
Yes, hot flashes, power surges, and private summers.
Exactly, that's the title of the piece.
Yes.
Are there things you promised yourself you wouldn't obsess over when you reach 50, and did you fulfill your promise or not?
I think that's things you can't help. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, getting up, just getting up out of bed after sleeping all night, getting up, and how hard it is, you know, like physically to sit up, you know, just it's so different, especially for a physical body like mine, to realize, oh my gosh, what is that? Oh, I'm stiff, you know, this kind of a thing. So I work very hard. I just came from the gym, you know, I just ran over here from goals, and I'm in the gym, but it's more because I want to be able to carry my own water and chop my own wood, even if I'm lucky to live as long as my mother has. But no, I didn't obsess too much, because I'm lucky. I'm youthful. The art, my work, keeps me in the mix. You know, I had this kid so early that you know, I'm already a grandmother. And you know, my life is designed in such a way as to sort of protect me to some degree, you know. And I don't age like somebody who would obsess ages. I haven't aged that way.
In addition to your autobiographical piece about turning 50, you much earlier did an autobiographical piece about dancing in a peep show to support your daughter after after you became a mother. And that's an interesting way for a dancer to start. What a strange relationship you must have with the men on the other side of the wall or the peephole or whatever when you're when they pay their money and you're dancing naked for them.
And they're very well. This was back in the day. We're talking 1978, I guess 79.
Oh, so your daughter was already in her early
My
teens?
Daughter was like, she was 13, 14. My daughter made all my tapes for me to dance to. My daughter induced me to Prince. She induced me to LTD, Bob Seger's Silver Bullet Band.
But how'd you feel about mom being a stripper?
Well, see, I just always felt like I had to tell her. I had to tell her that what I'm doing, I'm going to work, I'm working downtown, so she got it from me. I told my brothers because I want them to know where I was. I want them to know that, if they want to check on me, they knew where I was. You know, it was like I was making money. You know, it was like I wasn't a prostitute. I was making the most money I could make fast as I could, but back to the men, I think men are afraid of women. They're definitely afraid of vaginas, that's what I found not working down there. They have no idea what they want from women,
Would they talk with you on the other side of the...
Yeah.
What was it? Was it like a peephole or a wall?
It was a peep show, where you have a curtain and you put money in it, in the little machine, the curtain opens, and you're sitting behind plexiglass, and he can talk into the machine there or into the telephone. Some booths had a telephone, and so they're saying really silly stuff or very violent, mean, dark stuff. Which is the only way they can get off, is to be abusive or to just be silly. I was like the guys that were a little silly. Or I liked younger guys who, who had never, like sailors, San Francisco, the port town. And I remember this young sailor coming in. He must have been 18. I always tell people he was like from Podunk, Iowa or something. And he came in and his friends all opened the window and there was this color girl sitting there. And he came back. He said, "You sure are pretty." And it was just purity, we had a great time that night. He just hung out with me. It was like he just spent his little money in there, and he had never ever been in the company of a colored girl before, And he kept telling me how pretty I was,
Since you are in the theater room, part of what you do is observe people and transform your own personality. You must have been thinking about this, watching the guys relate to you and talk dirty to you. Were you studying them as they were studying you?
Yes, I was writing a lot of things down. I start to formulate questions because I wanted to make a performance about it. And I kept thinking, what's erotic? And what do men want from women and what do women want from men? And why is race and sexism, why are they such perfect bedfellows? I mean, things people would say, things the women backstage would say, because I was a beauty. I mean, legs for days, the butt, long before all this was popular. I mean, I was, like I said, I was a farm girl. And I was already doing gymnastics and trapeze work, so I was very strong. I could jump up and down those high heel shoes. I could kick. I could roll. And I had this great Donna Summer wig that I wore. I'd always open my show with Muddy Waters. I mean, that was how I opened the show, I Just Want to Make Love to You. It was like Lily's theme music,
Lily was your persona?
Yeah, Lily Overstreet from New Orleans was the full name. Sometimes the things the girls would say backstage, women can be so mean to each other too. And also, young white women, again, we're talking 1978, it's around the same time that Moscone was murdered in San Francisco, Harvey Milk. So the air was just electric. But I really wanted to know who the women were backstage as well. And the men outside was like just watching men come and go. And, there were priests, There were guys getting off from work. There were lost boys. It was amazing.
You know, you had this experience of like dancing nude in peep shows to support yourself and your daughter. Mm-hmm. And instead of walking away from this experience feeling demeaned, it sounds to me like you walked away thinking like, well, that was pretty interesting. I got a lot out of it. I'm going to do a, you know, theater show based on it.
It's all, you know, it's a journey. It's all an experience.
Well, did you walk into that experience knowing that you'd be able to walk away from it feeling like you were richer and better off because of it, as opposed to feeling demeaned as a result of it?
Well, I didn't. I knew that there was a story to tell. When I first applied for the job, and it was all lesbians running the show backstage, the mafia maybe owned the building, but the lesbians had been brought in from Baltimore, and they were great. And they were the ones who were hiring people. They were the women who had to look at me when I took my clothes off, and they said, "You are beautiful." They didn't want me to wear wigs. You know, they were saying, one woman said, "You look so much more dignified without it." And I said, "Honey, this is not dignity. I'm trying to pay my rent down here." I was not sure about what was going to happen, other than that I knew it was going to be a great adventure, this new dancing.
You've worked with a lot of women in prison, teaching them certain theater techniques, trying to turn their stories into monologues, theatrical monologues. What do you think they can get out of that?
What I've really learned how to do is impart transformative work, transformative technique that, you know, if you can reinvent yourself to the good of yourself. And I think that that's what they've been able to, you know, get out of working with me, is that we start out very, very simply. You know, there's a series of questions to answer, and then we have conversations. We talk about who we are, who we really are, where we want to go, where we've been. And then we create theater loosely based on a myth that I might find, but really entrenched in who they are. And as we work from 4 to 6 months, I am saying constantly, you know, just 2 months ago, you couldn't do that. Or 2 months ago, you wouldn't have said that. We have video that happens constantly. They can see themselves. So it's about transformation. And I think that they touch upon that. You know, even the ones that don't make it, I see them in the street and they might not be able to remember me, but they'll say, "Remember that class we had in jail?" Thinking I'm an inmate. And they said, "But you know, I still do the hand dance stuff. I still do that when I need to just calm down, you know." So it's just much more, it's more life saving stuff that I hope I leave with them, you know.
Rhodessa Jones, I thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Rhodessa Jones is the co-artistic director of the San Francisco performance company Cultural Odyssey and the director of the Medea Project, Theater for Incarcerated Women. She'll perform her shows Big Butt Girls, Hard-Headed Women, and They Speak Through Us at the National Black Theater Festival in Winston-Salem next month.